This is the Mind Your Business podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mind Your Business podcast. My name is Matt Williams. I'm an accountant from Oxford and I'm joined as always by the fabulous business coach, Alan Clark. How's your week been, Alan? You were just telling me we've got zero in your business now, and it's kind of really pushing it along and letting you kind of grow naturally.
I'm loving it. And if I'm a fabulous business coach, you're an extremely fabulous accountant for many different reasons. But yes, zero. What a system that is. That's all I'm going to say. I have fallen in love with it, and it's awesome. It really is awesome for any small business. Thoroughly recommend it.
I mean, we kind of, it's a bit blasé for us because all of our clients are on it, so we kind of get used to it. But Monday night we picked up not even a client. Someone said, can I have a look at some numbers for them, right? And they've got four businesses and they're on Sage. And the fact, like, if that was zero, I would say just invite me in, right? It'd be four emails, bing bing bong, jump, job done, I'm in, I can see it. Sage, I had to download the specific version, then I had to create an account, then I had to find a login, then I had to give them a passphrase, and then I found out Sage doesn't work on Macs, so I had to get my wife's computer out of the cupboard and do it all the same again. And then the passphrases didn't work, and I'm still not into all four of them, like 3 days later. And you just think, this isn't how it should be. Like, the world's moved. I know Sage, to be fair to them, have made great strides in the product, but that bit, that just ease of access, ease of use is just so far away from zero. It's unreal. And it made me settle. I was like, this is how it used to be. It's like kind of going and driving your granddad's car, you know. It's kind of fun for about 20 seconds, then you realize you miss air conditioning and power steering and anyway. But this is not an accountancy software podcast.
I was enjoying the Zero versus Sage debate, though. That was going to get quite feisty there, Matt. You could have kept going.
My colours are very, very firmly attached to the blue mask there. But right. Anyway, that's enough of that. What are we talking about? What are we going to be properly talking about today, Alan?
Okay, so quite often in this podcast, we talk about performance. And we talk about people and we talk about lots of things. And I was reading an article very recently by the McKinsey Group, and they had done a huge global survey very, very recently on financial performance. And something like 1,800 companies over pretty much the globe. And they found out that there was only a small percentage of companies actually had a definite focus on not just financial performance, but people performance, and that these companies outperformed the rest over a 5 to 9 year period. And the conclusion was, and I'm going into more detail here, but the conclusion was that a company or an organization that really, really does go for financial performance, customer performance, and people, its own people performance in terms of development, skill set, mindset, etc., etc., outperform over the long term. And whilst for us, and I think that's fair to say, that's the sort of wisdom we like to share on this podcast. I was pleasantly surprised to see it there in something like a McKinsey article, but actually very disappointed it was only 10%. When actually there is a clear route map for every company to have this. So I just thought we could get into a conversation about performance, and the sweet spot seems to be financial performance and people performance and both, and that seems to be quite rare.
Okay. And just so we're clear, when we say people performance, we don't necessarily mean people in our team kind of performing in terms of pushing out the widgets as efficiently and effectively as we can.
No,
we mean
no
performance as in allowing them to grow and thrive in the yes. culture around. Is that what we're saying?
Brilliant. Brilliant piece of clarity. No, not Victorian, Dickensian sort of get as much done as possible, but absolutely yeah. right about looking at skill set, behaviours, development, promotion, culture, that sort of stuff.
Okay. And I think it's really interesting because this is an area that varies massively. If I think about the business clients that I look after, there are some, most of them employ people, but there are some that put massive stock in trying to have this positive, high-performing team and all the culture and growth and benefits that comes around. And there are some that think that because they're a small business, that kind of healthy HR side doesn't really apply to them, and that they just employ someone to do a job and then, you know, off they go at the end of the day. And it's for the big boys to worry about kind of, you know, that positive HR stuff. So I'm really interested in how this conversation goes, but it's, yeah, it's very varied. Now, just looking at the businesses I look at, it's very varied.
I would say, and just to go on that, you know, just using my memory here to remember the bit, but there was, if I was to break down what they found, they found 21% of companies that were really focused on the financial performance and putting in good numbers, but not clear evidence of people development and culture that were really focused
managing
on
the margins, right? Let's call that
mind your podcast version of that is managing the margins, right? So 21% managing the margins. Then there was this sort of 51% of nothingness where there was no clear evidence that they were managing the margins or developing their people. It seemed to just be not quite make it up as you go along, but there was no clear evidence of any real intent, and these companies, 51%, were underperforming right across.
They're the ones you said just before we started recording. These ones are drifting. And I really like
yes.
that. Drifting.
Yeah. I'm loving this. Right. So we've got manage the margins, we've got drifting. Right. And you'll come up with one for this. I know you will. Now, let me get this right. I think it was 15% of companies were all about the people. It was a love-in. But there was no real financial performance. So the financial performance was relatively poor, but they really cared for their employees.
Yeah, so the socialist party type of business.
So there was that going on, and then only 10%, so the smallest group, had a clear intent to manage the margins and develop their people. And it was these yeah. companies that were outperforming in the medium to long term. So this 5 to 9 year period, these companies were winning.
Well, I think the first hurdle for any business owner to look at is that wherever you go, networking, conferences, business coaches, accountants, whoever, they're always telling business owners they need to be on their numbers, they need to understand their profit and loss account, they need to understand their margins. And I'm not saying we're guilty of this, but we have these conversations on our podcast, right? Mm-hmm. You need to understand what product makes you money, what make sure you're selling at the right price. That's all the fundamental stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the people side of that, you could drop out a people policy, how we manage our staff, how we build our team, based purely on those numbers. So, mm-hmm. you know, we know that our plan is to open 5 more locations over the next 10 years. So we're going to need a manager, and we're going to need some staff, and we're going to need this, and we're going to need that. And you have no focus on the why you were doing that, other than we know that we need these bums on seats, and these bums on seats will deliver this much margin, and we're focused on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to get this balance, or to hit this sweet spot of looking at both, your conversations and your thinking about your people needs to be more than that. That's what we're saying, is that it can't just be You know, it's not a part of a formula where X times staff equals, you know, this much margin. It needs to be more than just slotting new people into the system to make more margin. It needs to have a think about what the end goal for each individual is and where we're going with them and why. Let the culture drive. We know that a high performing team will deliver more margin, but don't focus on the margin. Let's focus on the people for an element. Is that where we are?
Yeah, exactly that. And I'm going back to, I want to go back to your something you said near the start about maybe a chunk of smaller businesses think that's this focus, dual focus on people and managing the margin and developing people's for the larger organizations. And I'll give you an example. There's three businesses that I'm coaching the chief execs right now that are, I would say, in the small, they're certainly less than 10 million turnover a year space, right? And two of them that would be under a million. Okay, so that's the size. So in all three businesses over the last 6 months, they've made an investment decision to invest in, let's call it, a general manager role. Okay,
right.
And a general manager role, now all in different industries, so that general manager role is different, but the premise is the same, and it's the first really good go at widening or building a structure conducive to growth. But they see the huge merit in that position would take the pressure off a lot of the people inside the company, including the chief exec, and let that chief exec lead a different level and do the things that the chief exec can uniquely do. And so that's been a cost. So manage the margin, there's a cost. So the margin arguably has gone down for a little while. But in all three businesses, the business has shown real growth. And in all three businesses, they've taken their time to ensure that that general manager has got the optimum, what do you call it, characteristics, skill sets, attitude, and paying back now tenfold. So these are, I would say, three examples of companies that are small but have got this blend of manage the margin and developing people, and they're going to get the benefit for the next 3 years for sure, given the momentum they've got.
100%. That, I love the, that ability for someone to take a step up and challenge themselves, but to remove kind of the lower end work of the person higher up the kind of org chart,
mm-hmm.
is a massive win, and a relatively easy win. It's not a cheap win because obviously it comes mm-hmm. with a cost. Mm-hmm. But we did this in our business.
Yep.
When we brought our office manager into our business, we kind of trained her and empowered her to run a bit of relatively mundane company secretarial work that we sell to clients. But at the old firm and at most big traditional firms, they will have a specialist company secretarial person that does all the COSEC work, right? This is confirmation statements, dealing with share transfers, appointing directors, setting up companies, that kind of stuff. It's often someone with a legal background rather than an accountancy background. And you have this position where you've got this very expensive, high-level resource that covers, you know, 10% of what they do needs their level of expertise and competence. And 70% of what they do is form filling, and software does that for you. It just needs someone to take ownership of it and manage the deadlines. And then, so traditional firms take this approach of employing someone on, I don't know, 40 grand a year, and then mm-hmm. hoping that they can produce enough top end work to justify it. Whereas we've got someone on less than that, that slots us in at 15% of their day, but produces 90% of what that other person does for, you know, half the cost. But it's not even their main job, but it's something that it's a challenge. It's challenged them and empowered them and mm-hmm. let them grow. And it's it's kind of, we've got a department out of nothing now, whereas before we wouldn't be able to afford, you know, if we were just looking at the numbers, we wouldn't be able to afford to put that co-sec person. We'd farm it out to someone, you know, to somebody that would outsource it for us. So we've strengthened our business. We've empowered one of our team. And now, 2.5 years on, we're making margin on it now, which is great.
Yeah.
And that's what we're saying, isn't it? It's that if you're just looking at the numbers, you would outsource it until you're at a point where you can employ this expensive person and then try and make as much money as you can. Having this view on a culture that empowers and grows and teaches and trains and loves your staff gets you these results, but it's a longer process. By definition, it'll be a longer process because there'll be a cheaper way to do it at the front end that will make you more margin. But this is the long term win. You've got to have that eye on the long term game with this sort of plan, I think.
And I think that's a great example. And again, that's a creative example, isn't it? That's about you looking at resource and going, right, okay, what can I afford for now, and how can I get the benefit of this investment? And of course, what happens is that the company grows and there's more revenue and. So that's a really creative example there. The bit that I love in this whole report is the fact that it puts to bed the myth that people development is the soft skills. Or no, that's not true. It puts to bed the myth that people development is a soft way of doing business. And I think that attitude is very, very much still out there. And I think what it's shown is that no, actually people, if you want a top performing business for the medium to long term, you need to have significant focus on people development and everything that comes from that, the leadership, the structure, the pay, the actual reward, bonus shares, everything that's in that mix. If you want to outperform the rest over medium to long term, because the other thing it sparked, and I now think this is very obvious, but at the time when I was reading that, I was going, oh gosh, I hadn't even thought of that, is of course this war on talent. You know, more and more there is a limited talent out there.
Finite and of course, talent pool.
Yeah, finite talent pool. And where's the talent going to go? Are they going to go to a company that's growing, that's challenging, but has got a focused on career people development? Or they're going to go to one that 3 years they'll spit you out and you're burnt out, and it's short termism, and most people are going to go to the first one.
100%. But this, I had not an argument, but I had a quite robust conversation with a client about this last week. So anyone that knows me from LinkedIn will see that we've had three phenomenal months. The growth has been phenomenal, but the effort the staff have put in, and I was ill for a period and lots of stuff going on. And my team absolutely smashed January. They put so much effort in and did so many hours. And so come 1st of February, I closed the office for the rest of the week, gave them, you know, we finished at lunchtime, went to the pub, and then they had Thursday and Friday off, completely closed the office. And I tell you what, the feedback just, before we get to what the conversation I had, the feedback from the staff was phenomenal. Every single one of them did something interesting with those 2 days. Nobody just vegged at home. They all went and, you know, did their own thing with their family, on their own, with their partners, whatever they did. And they all came in on Monday absolutely buzzing and have carried on with that same energy level that we had in January, where it was kind of 105%, lots of stress. And they're back in. There's not lots of stress now, but there's lots of effort and lots of energy. Yeah, a client basically said to me, well, why are you letting them have 2 days off? Like, that's just the job. They have to work hard in January. That's what accountants have to do, isn't it? That's what every other firm I've ever known is always busy in January, and then you just carry on in February. And I said, yeah, every other firm might do that. I don't think they do, but that's okay. It's like the way I, as the business owner, saw where the team were, and I needed those 2 days, and if I need it, they'll need it. But it just baffles me that, and it's like, no, that's too soft. You're too soft with them. And at the first point, I thought he was joking. I thought he was just messing up. But he was genuinely serious. Like, no, I wouldn't do that. Don't agree with that at all.
But that's... So, I'm clearly in your camp, and well done. And actually, one of your team reached out to me and said she had a wonderful couple of days off. So there you go. Yeah, but actually, that's backed up by this article. This article says that, and I'm just done the maths, 75% of 1,800 companies globally would be of your client's viewpoint.
Yeah.
But it's, you know...
We have, the same with our unlimited holiday policy. So we've got a policy where... and I'm not saying that we are this... bastion of virtue in terms of how to manage your team, but we have this scheme where the staff, they have, you know, contractually they have a certain amount of holiday, because we have to, HR law means we have to, but the way we work, if you've got all your work done, take the day off. That's how we, you know, that's how we operate. And we as a business win almost on every single employee on that basis. The majority of them don't take very many, if any, more days than what they're contractually obliged to. But what they've got is this feeling that if they need to, if, I don't know, the dog needs to go to the vets, or they've got to go and see their grandma, or whatever it is, there is no stress, no bother. They just take the time off and we work it out at the end. And there's no tallying and there's no counting. And it's only at the year end where I might have a look down with our HR lady and we'll say, actually, whilst we need to make sure that employee X takes a couple of days because they haven't taken enough. They go through that, you know, we've got that. Well, they know that if they need it, it's there, and they take advantage of it. But we get so much more back as an employer, because they know, because they're all comfortable. They just get the work done and then worry about the holiday afterwards. And no one's counting days and no one's counting hours. Same with timesheets. That's why we don't have timesheets in our business, because we trust our people. That, all of that mindset is kind of helping to build this culture and this focus on people performance. The same as, you know, you must have heard these horror stories of employers monitoring remote working staff at home.
Oh, to horrific. Make sure, horrific.
Keyboards. I mean, where my mind goes with that, you've managed people before, right, in your jobs.
Yeah.
You don't stand over them and watch how quickly they're moving the mouse around. You wouldn't do that in the office. You wouldn't go and sit on their shoulder and just watch them for 5 minutes. Why do you think you need to do that when they're at home? It just boggles my mind. But the...
I know.
Carry on. I'm winding myself up.
But that, we know that goes on. And it's gone on since a year dot. You know, what is it? Management style X, management style Y, carrot and stick. Etc. So 150 years of management theory, but a good chunk of it is in that, you know, humans are lazy, therefore you need to externally motivate them to get them to do anything. And the numbers sort of say in this report, that's still the common thought. It might be disguised in other ways and hidden behind advances in tech, like I can now spy you through your webcam or whatever algorithm I'm using to work out how many words per minute you're typing, therefore you're skiving. But the 25% of companies that are not in that space are the ones that will, on the whole, be more successful in the medium to long term on pretty much all metrics, including the hard financial numbers. And of course, that's true.
Who's the American? Have you heard the story of this American CEO who gave his, you know, gave his salary to his staff?
No, not at all.
Here we go. Right, look at this. I'm going to share. I'll share a link with this for the podcast. It's an American guy, and his business, based in Seattle, name is Dan Price. Right, this is back in 2015. This article. And basically, he cut his own salary as much as he could in this tech business, successful tech business, in an experiment that some described as lunatic, right? This is right. The headlines from the press this time. And he basically, he took cut his salary down to the bare bones to make sure that the minimum salary in his business was $70,000 a year. Whatever he did, whether you're the cleaner, the janitor, the engineer, the minimum salary in that business was $70,000. Whereas the average salary before he did that was $48,000, right? So he's got a massive increase.
He's hate it.
And he was on a £1.1 million salary beforehand. So it was a very successful business. And he chopped that down to nothing and gave that amongst the staff. And then I read an article this like 7 years on in 2022. And his business has like trebled or flown. It's unbelievable how much it's done. So the minimum salary now has gone up again because obviously we're 7 years on. Where are the numbers? But it's bonkers how all the talking heads were like, this guy's crazy and the stock price is going to crash and the business is going to fold. And it's grown phenomenally because, it's grown every year since then. It was written off as doomed by the market and it is now miles outperforming its main competition, right? That's a pretty extreme example. But if you build the right team and then empower them and nurture them in this world where talent is everything and really scarce, that's the results you can get. The numbers will come, right?
Oh, my goodness. And in that example, I pretty much, with absolute positivity, would think that, yes, the reward is there. And that's fantastic. And that's a great motivator. But the culture, the purpose, the engagement, the value, all of that will be high as well. The guy hasn't done that just by having a rotten culture that with a company that's drifting, but everyone suddenly got an extra 25 grand. That wouldn't create that performance step up at all. So I suspect this is an absolute 10 out of 10 example of a manage the margin and develop your people blend. And look at the results you get. So, and that, I think that's the big, big point in all of this for me, is that these companies, it's challenging. It takes a lot of energy to be really clear on a purpose, to think about the culture you truly want, to lead that culture and lead that purpose, to get clear on the priorities, to make sure that everyone's clear on their role, that they're being developed and they're all aligned behind the company goals, that they feel valued, they bought in financially, they're getting other rewards. It's a great place to work. Except, so even that, and that's only a small part of it, it takes a lot of energy and a lot of intent. And I guess some people have just thought, bugger it, we're just going to focus on manage the margin. But it's entirely possible. Your company is showing that. It's entirely possible. And the financials are there. They're absolutely there. And you will be the best in class. And usually the best in class score more goals and win the cups. So, you know, I just think there's a massive, massive motivational lesson in that article for everyone. And it's still rare to be able to blend both, but entirely possible. And the prizes are huge.
That is key. The fact that it's rare means that if you pivot your business to a strategy that follows that,
yep,
you're likely to be one of a few in your industry that is doing that. And therefore, your ability to, it's like a secret power, isn't it, right? Your ability to attract and retain the best people will go up. And because of that, you'll start to get those benefits of the increased margins, the better customer service, all the good things that come from that.
Yeah.
And you'll be unique. And so it kind of compounds year on year, because the longer it takes your competition to kind of cotton on and focus, and history tells us if we're only at that percent now, you know, it's not growing. There's not many businesses are seeing this and pivoting towards this. For every year that you're focused on this and your competition and not, the gap is getting wider and that kind of benefit of doing it gets bigger. And so if you're in a people business, why wouldn't you focus on that as a main strategy for the next 2 or 3 years?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is at the start of the year, everyone. It's only February. So get on it and reap the benefits, is what I say.
I'm off to slash my salary. No, I'm not going to do that. There's a limit. Right. Okay, well, look, that's 31 minutes just like that. So we shall probably wrap up there. I mean, if it's another one that it doesn't feel like rocket science, does it, to look after and nurture your team? But those percentages show that it's rarer than it should be that that people do that. So that's the big opportunity for people out there, I think. Have you got anything else you would like to add before I wrap it up?
No, I think it's been really clear, Matt. You know, it's there for everyone. It has its challenges, but the benefits are huge. And I guess the biggest objection to it all is what your client said, that's a bit soft. But actually, in this article, that it's not at all. It's a very wise approach if you want to have top-end financials over a 5 to 10 year period.
Perfect. Okay, well, look, on that note, we will wrap it up for today. We will be back next week with more podcast gold. But for now, give us a shout on social if you like what you're hearing, and we will see you next week for another Mind Your Business podcast. That's all from me, and that's all from my friend Alan. Bye.
Goodbye.
This is the Mind Your Business podcast.